गौराधमादव कुंज बिहारी गौराधमादव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीगण वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपीगण वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी शरनंदना ब्रज जन रंजना शरनंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरा मुक्तारी यमुना तीरा मुक्तारी गौराधमादव कुंज बिहारी गौराधमादव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीगण वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपीगण वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोरनंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोरनंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरा मुक्तारी यमुना तीरा मुक्तारी गौराधमादव कुंज बिहारी
विष्णुपातमंगपरिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरस्तु श्री श्रीमरेशि भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय गीताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय हा गौर श्री समलवती हा गौर श्री समलवती हा गौर श्री समलवती हा गौर श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8, Lord Krishna shows the universal form. Text number 23. Word meanings, Tat Matarao, their mothers, Rohini and Yashoda. Nija Sutao, their own respective sons. Gremaya, with great affection. Snuvantyao, allowed to suck the flowing milk from their breasts very happily. Panka Anga Radha Ruchirao, whose beautiful transcendental bodies were covered with muddy cow dung and urine. Upagriha, taking care of Dhorbhyam by their arms, Bhatra, delivering them, Stenam, the breast, Prapibato, when the babies were sucking, Sma, indeed, Mukham, the mouth, Nidiksha, and seeing, Mugda Smita Alpa Dashanam, smiling with little teeth coming out of their mouths, they were more and more attracted. Yayatu, and enjoyed Pramodam, transcendental bliss. Tamatara Nija Sutta. Oops, sorry about that. Chintamani. Tanmatare nijasuto grinaya snuvantyao. Pankanga raga ruchira upagriya dhorbhyam. Dattva stanam prapibato smamukam niriksha. Mugda smita padashanam yayatu pramodam. Tanna tara nijasuta grinaya stuvantyao. Pankanga raga ruchira upagriya dhorbhyam. Dattvastanam prathibato smamukam niriksha. Mugdasmita padashanam yayatu pramodam. Tanmatara nijasuta grinaya snuvantyao. Pankanga raga ruchira upagriya dhorbhyam. Dattva stanam prathibato smamukam niriksha. Mugdha smitalpa dashanam yayatu pramodam. Pankanga raga ruchira upagriya dhorbhyam. Dattva stanam prathibato smamukam niriksha. Mugdha smitalpa dashanam yayatu pramodam. Tanmatara nijasuta grinaya snuvantyao. Pankanga raga ruchira upagriya dhorbhyam. दत्वस्तनं पिबतोस्म मुखं निरीक्ष्य मुग्धस्मितापदशनं ययतु प्रमोदम् तन्मातरौ निजसितो गृणेऽस्मिवन्त्य पङ्गाङ्गरागरुचिरागुपक्रियधोर्भ्याम् दत्त्वासनं पविभतो स्म मुखं निरीक्ष्य मोदस्मितापदशनं ययतु प्रमोदम् तन्मातराणि जसितानि पङ्गाङ्गरागरुचिरागुपक्रियधोर्भ्याम् दत्तस्तनं प्रतिभतो स्म मुखं निरीक्ष्य मोदस्मितापदशनं ययतु प्रमोदम्
Translation: dressed with muddy earth mixed with cow dung and cow urine, the babies looked very beautiful. And when they went to their mothers, both Yashoda and Rohini picked them up with great affection, embraced them, and allowed them to suck the milk flowing from their breasts. While sucking the breast, the babies smiled, and their small teeth were visible. Their mothers, upon seeing those beautiful teeth, enjoy great transcendental bliss. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As the mothers cared for their respective babies, by the arrangement of yoga maya, the babies thought, here is my mother. And the mothers thought, here is my son. Because of affection, milk naturally flowed from the mother's breasts, and the babies drank it. When the mothers saw small teeth coming in, they would count them and be happy. And when the babies saw their mothers allowing them to drink their breast milk, the babies also felt transcendental pleasure. As this transcendental affection continued between Rohini and Balaram and Yashoda and Krishna, they all enjoyed transcendental bliss. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Nena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Tamma Tarau Nijasutau Gunaya Snuvantyo Pankanga Raga Guchirav Pagriyato Adhyam Dattvas Tanam Prapibato स्ममुखं निरीक्ष्य मुग्धस्मितापदशनं ययतु प्रमोदम्. Dressed with muddy earth mixed with cow dung and cow urine, the babies looked very beautiful. And when they went to their mothers, both Yashoda and Rohini picked them up with great affection, embraced them, and allowed them to suck the milk flowing from their breasts. While sucking the breast, the babies smiled, and their small teeth were visible. Their mothers, upon seeing those beautiful teeth, enjoyed great transcendental bliss. The theme of rasa is one of the most important in our philosophy, not to be found anywhere else, as far as I know. I don't think anyone discusses relationships with God in any other religious tradition. So we have it. It's very important to us. One of the very attractive features of our philosophy, how God enjoys in different relationships. Of course, our fundamental philosophical understanding for that is, why not? He's God. Why should he miss out on something that we can have? We can enjoy so many things in this world, different relationships. So why should God be limited only to perhaps servitude, but everyone serving him in awe and reverence. As far as I know, in other traditions, we don't hear about, at least the major world traditions that we know of, we don't hear about intimate, loving relationships between God and his devotees in a kind of relaxed mood, you might say, natural, very natural relationship. So we have that especially here. It said, the last word of the verse is Premodam Yashoda Mohini and Krishna Balaram. They're experiencing Premodam, which means transcendental bliss. Moda means happiness, and pra, when you stick pra in front of it, it expands the meaning, that prefix. So Premoda means the greatest bliss, transcendental bliss. When we see these pastimes, we were hearing yesterday, Tama Harpagu was mentioning this phrase, perverted reflection. So when we read these, or others may read them and think, well, of course, every mother gets bliss from exchanging with her child. What's the difference? You may look at these and think, well, this is just ordinary exchange of affection between mother and son. It's naturally, the mother holds the baby in the lap and sees the little teeth coming in, and everything is so cute with the little baby, and we smile, and we get so much pleasure. We think, oh, so, smile. Little children come, and people smile just to see them, so we think, well, that's what's going on here. That's the just the nature of these relationships. So we have to be a little wary of that. We have to understand that what's being described here in the spiritual world is miles and miles and miles and light years beyond our conception. For example, we know from the Nectar of Devotion, different levels of happiness are described. Other places too, of course, in the Bhagavatam. Ordinary material pleasure in this world, it's considered to be completely insignificant. Something we think, wow, this is really nice, I really enjoyed some happiness. Sometimes I look back at my life and I think of certain moments in my life where I really, really experienced something where I was really happy, elated about something, and I think, well, that's happiness, that's real happiness. But from the perspective of the self-realized soul, or from the perspective of transcendence, that's nothing. Even the word happiness is not quite right, and we're limited in our ability to describe them. We have to use the same language when we talk about the spiritual world, the same language that we use in this world, but the difference is so immense that it's really hard to compare them. In fact, we find different phrases in the Bhagavatam. One cannot compare this to that, whatever it is. For example, there's one, Tulayama Ravenapi, I forget how the verse goes, but it says, even a moment's association with a pure devotee cannot be compared to any happiness that you can attain anywhere in this material world, or within personal Brahman realization, which the yogis are striving so hard, the jnanis are striving so hard, because they have a sense that there's a pleasure beyond this world that's not dependent on the conditions of this world, conditional, unconditional happiness, which is something greater, which stays. And one of the problems with ordinary material happiness is that it comes and goes. I'm elated for a moment, then the next moment it goes away, it doesn't stay. So it said in the Bhagavatam that the happiness of material life, ordinary, the fruitive worker, or we can say, the karmi, is just insignificant. It's just a speck. And even the happiness of Brahman, you'd have to multiply it millions and billions of times over, and it still wouldn't be anything like the nectar of Bhaktirasa, Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, the nectar of from the ocean of devotional service. That happiness of tasting that nectar, when you actually taste that nectar, there's just nothing like it. So even though this is a reflection, we can say what we see in this world is a reflection of what happens in the spiritual world, we have to be a little cautious in thinking that Mother Yashoda's happiness is kind of like the happiness I feel in this world. Or it is comparable somehow to degree. It's way, way beyond anything that we can experience in this world. Therefore, we say perverted reflection. This perverted, like in a funhouse. You go in there and you look at your reflection and you look like you're 2 feet tall and 6 feet wide or something. So the form is still there, but it's so perverted. You never want to live like that. If you looked like that, you'd be hiding away somewhere. So it's a perverted reflection. So what we experience in this world is a perverted reflection. It's twisted. It's some kind of representation, but it's not exactly the real thing. Just like in the conjugal wrestle too, the wrestle of romance. By the way, the word conjugal, strictly speaking by the dictionary, means married. So what we call conjugal is actually palukia bhava, technically, according to the dictionary, is not a, might call it amorous love, the amorous wrestle, the romantic wrestle, might be more fitting description of it. So in that also we look and see, of course we're cautioned by Shukadeva Goswami, don't think that this is an ordinary exchange between male and female. It's not the same thing. What Radha and Krishna have, what Krishna and gopis have, it's not the same thing you have with your husband or wife or boyfriend or girlfriend. It's something different. And the pleasure, of course, is many, many millions of times over. There's another example that's given. Even the happiness of Brahmanda, the happiness of Brahman realization, is like trying to compare an ocean to the amount of water in the hoofprint of a calf. So they're both water, and they're both wet, but there's a huge difference between them. You don't have whales in the hoofprint of a calf, for example. So that ocean has things that the water in the hoofprint of a calf doesn't have. So certainly the degree of pleasure is much, much higher. Now, of course, the pleasure is also increasing according to the degree of intimacy between Krishna and his devotee. One of the nice, because this particular rasa, vatsalya rasa, we know how the rasa, there's a kind of gradation, you might say. I spoke of this before. It's a little cautious to say that one is higher than the other, better than the other. But there are additives. Things get added on as you go to the higher rasas. So in vatsalya rasa, the devotee is actually superior to Krishna, takes a superior position. This begins also in the fraternal rasa, in the relationship between Krishna and his friends. Some of them, they sometimes take a superior position. Like Lord Balaram, he protects Krishna sometimes. He takes that mood in protecting Krishna. So as the evolution, you might say, goes from one to the other, then in the vatsalya rasa, then it's much more emphasized, of course. The devotee thinks, I have to protect Krishna, I have to take care of Krishna. Krishna is my dependent. He's dependent on me. If I don't feed him, he's going to die. If I don't protect him, he's going to die. In the dasya rasa, we think, even in the beginning stages, we're always praying, Krishna, protect me. One of the principles that we learn, one of the six principles of surrender is, Krishna is always my protector. So that goes out the window when you're in vatsalya rasa. I'm Krishna's protector. Beyond surrender, you might say. Of course, this is the surrender of the devotee, trying to, especially for us sadhakas, trying to advance in Krishna consciousness, we try to develop that mood. But this is another indication of how in the spiritual world, things are different. So in this vatsalya bhav, the devotee thinks, no, I have to take care of Krishna. Now, of course, Krishna likes this. That's another going back to this idea that why should Krishna not have whatever we have? Prabhupada gave some nice examples of this, how it's natural to want to have the position where you're not always in charge, you're not always the boss. Karta Mishai, Prabhupada, this Karta Mishai deity, Prabhupada called the boss. He stands with one hand on his hip. Like sometimes little kids are like that, bossy, right? They take a particular posture and they tell you what to do. So here's little Krishna, just like he's talking to his father, kind of telling him what to do. So he's the boss. But especially, of course, he's worshipped as the boss, as the Lord, the Creator, the Master. We bow down to him, we offer full dandavats in front of him. So that's the way he's worshipped, always in that mood. So Prabhupada gave the example that even in this world, somebody who's always in a position of authority, sometimes they like to be discredited or humiliated, not exactly, maybe the butt of jokes or whatever. He gave one example of Gopal Ban. Gopal Ban, of course, was the king's minister. I think it was Gopal Ban. Anyway, a court jester. Gopal Ban was more than that, of course. He was a minister. But sometimes kings have a jester. What's the jester there for? He's there to lighten the mood. Because the king has so many heavy responsibilities. He has to sentence people to death, and in traditional times at least. Sometimes he would do it himself. And so many people come with so many problems, and he has to rule the whole kingdom, he has to make sure the citizens are happy, and everyone comes to him cowering in fear. So the jester comes and kind of lightens things up a little bit. So Prabhupada told one morning, we'll say Gopal, I don't remember if it was Gopal, but we'll say it was Gopal. So Gopal came before the king, I think it was Gopal. So the king asked him, because the king would joke with him, and he would sit, so the king asked him, Gopal, what's the difference between you and an ass? So Gopal looked at the distance between him and the king, and he said, it's about 3 feet. So the king laughed. Ah, you got me on that one. So here, he's the king. He could cut his head off, but he allows it because he wants that. He wants to have that relationship. He wants to have a light, joking mood with somebody, or somebody to tell him off, tell him what to do, because nobody does that. He doesn't have friends who dare to do that because they might get their heads cut off. So he appoints someone to do that. Another example Prabhupada gave is that Gladstone, I think he was a prime minister in England, that someone came to see him, a big man came to see him, had an appointment to see him, and he was waiting and waiting outside the door of his chamber, couldn't get in to see him. So finally he peeked in the door and he saw, oh, there's Prime Minister Gladstone on his hands and knees crawling around the floor with his grandson on his back playing horsey. So here he is, the Prime Minister. You have to, so much decorum is there, and you have to act in a certain way with so much respect. So he has to be approached in a certain way, spoken to in a certain way, and everyone's afraid. And hey, you go to see a big person, you can imagine if you were going to visit the President of the United States, how nervous you would be. But not his grandson. For his grandson, he's just grandpa. He's jumping on his back and maybe bossing him around, telling him what to do there, do this, do that. I know my granddaughter does that all the time. Pretend you're this, pretend you're that. So they tell you what to do, and you enjoy it because you have that relationship with them. So Krishna also, he's always the boss. Ekale Ishwara Krishna Arya Sabritya. And this is summed up very neatly in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Ekale Ishwara Krishna. There's only one Ishwara when you get right down to it. Arya Sabritya. All the others are Britya. All the others are servants. Krishna is the boss and everybody else is servant. Anybody you can think of is subordinate to Krishna. So naturally, people who approach him in that way. But Krishna, he doesn't want to always be in that mood. He wants to have other moods. So, in Goloka Vrindavan, in fact, this is his original mood. You might say this is the most natural God, form of position of God, enjoying with his friends. Just like us, when we let our hair down, we just enjoy with our friends. No, nobody's uptight. You can express yourself freely. You just feel yourself. You feel at home. So in Vrindavan, of course, Krishna is at home. God is at home in Vrindavan. He enjoys himself. He's carefree there. He doesn't have to work. Doesn't have to worry about anybody worshiping him. interfering with what is with his play. It's all play. It's all lila. He just enjoys. Now, of course, the fortunate thing with Krishna, the fortunate thing, or the reality of Krishna is that he can do that, and he can do all the other stuff too at the same time. When the high court judge or the governor or the president is at home enjoying with his family, there comes a time when, oh, I have to leave now. I got to go to work. I got to go back to the real world. Sometimes we might say this on Monday morning. Time to go back to the real world. Yeah. So, but Krishna, his real world is Goloka Vrindavan. And the business of the so-called real world, all of the worlds that have expanded from him, others can take care of that. They're Krishna too. Of course, he can go to work and stay home at the same time. That's how you might say it. He can stay home and enjoy with his family and do his business in the court at the same time. So God at home and God at work, it's the same God. He can do both at the same time. And we can't do that. So this is another example of how, well, we shouldn't think that Krishna is the same as I am and Krishna's happiness is the same as mine or Krishna's associates are the same as mine. Because in some superficial way they appear to be the same, because it is different. It's a different world. Another way of looking at this is if you read in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu about the different rasas, there's a whole chapter on Vatsalya rasa, as there is on the other rasas and sub-rasas even, major ones and minor ones, or subordinate ones. And you'll see there that this rasa that Yashoda has with Krishna, it's not only when he's a baby, it's also he goes through different ages. Komala, Poganda, Kaishur, Poganda, and Kumar. Oh, I'm getting mixed up. Kumar is the first one. And then there are also different, these are also broken down into subcategories. So Krishna has all these different ages when different things happen and different features appear on his body, just like when his teeth are just beginning to come in. So that's one of the particular ages. So Krishna is going through all these different ages. And Mother Yashoda, she has her relationship naturally. He's her son. She goes through all these ages. But at the same time, they're always existing. So you think, well, how does that happen? How does that work exactly? So this is another indication. It's a different world. Things happen differently there. Krishna's ages all exist simultaneously in the spiritual world. And Mother Yashoda is enjoying Krishna. Because time, everything that we think of is bound by time. It's encapsulated within time, locked within time. Time controls it. And we can't really see things. We can't think outside of time in our current bound, time-bound condition of existence. So to conceive of these things that go on in Krishna's world, very difficult, they're impossible for us. They're achintya. Our minds cannot grasp them. But somehow or other, Mother Yashoda is enjoying these pastimes over and over and over again. Of course, another way she enjoys them over and over and over again is that Krishna's lila is being carried on one after the other in different universes. So in this world also, she's enjoying them as she travels with Krishna's roadshow in the material world. Like Prabhupada said, now it's a certain time, now it's 8:30 here, soon it won't be 8:30 anymore, it'll be 8:30 somewhere else though. That time will always be present somewhere. So it may go past us. When Krishna leaves this world, that doesn't mean his pastimes stop, they're going on somewhere else. So Mother Yashoda is always enjoying these things. When we enjoy pastimes with others, especially like with children, we see they grow up so fast. This is the cliche. We say, oh, they grow up so fast. So we want to capture those. We want to take pictures. And so that we have, that we can capture that time somehow. So Mother Yashoda doesn't have to do that. She doesn't need a camera to take Krishna's picture so she remembers what he looked like when he was 3 months old. She can always enjoy that transcendental pleasure. So this, of course, she does. from Odom, she enjoys this transcendental bliss. And all involved, everybody. And not only Yashoda, but all the other gopis, they also, her contemporaries, they enjoy Krishna. They like it when Krishna does bad things, so they can go and talk to Mother Yashoda about it, and then see how Krishna reacts, see how he responds, see his mischievous little face. They love all of these things. So all this great transcendental pleasure is available there, and it's being revealed here in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I was thinking of, as we were chanting this verse today, Sanskrit is so beautiful. And it's supposed to be, of course, according to the modern conception, this wasn't possible thousands of years ago. People didn't have the ability, mental ability, to compose poetry like this, or language like this. That's why it's called Uttama Shloka. The highest polished verses are used for glorifying Krishna. That's appropriate. So when we chant these verses, even chanting the verses, give us a taste of the transcendental pleasure that's being relished. And of course, the more we do it, the more Krishna is there. Just like Lord Chaitanya, when he would chant verses, he would enter into the pastime completely. And it's always new and always fresh. Over and over again, he would relish the same pastimes with his intimate devotees and enter into these leelas. So that's possible also for us. Eventually, once we crack the code, we can enter into that whole new world that's available to us through this, through our parampara, actually. It's descending down through the parampara for our benefit. Okay, the translation again. Dressed with muddy earth mixed with cow dung and cow urine, the babies looked very beautiful. And when they went to their mothers, both Yashoda and Rohini picked them up with great affection, embraced them, and allowed them to suck the milk flowing from their breasts. While sucking the breast, the babies smiled, and their small teeth were visible. Their mothers, upon seeing those beautiful teeth, enjoyed great transcendental bliss. Any questions or comments? Prabhu, Indupati? Oh, no, you're swatting flies? Oh, okay. Dhamaraj?
I was just remembering this popular pastime. There's this Brahmana in Vrindavan, I believe he's Mohandas Chaube or Mohan Chaube. He had a Gopal deity, and his children used to play with the deity in the courtyard in the sand every day. So one day, Sanatan Goswami was passing by and he saw it, and he stopped him. He said, "No, that's offensive. You can't play with a deity like that. You have to explain how to worship." So that night, Gopal dreamed Sanatan Goswami. He said, "I was enjoying this play and this sand and dirt so much, and now you have messed the whole thing up. Yeah. They don't want to come with you."
You were describing how Krishna simultaneously can be enjoying at different ages and different places. So it seems also that, like, Mother Yashoda has different, her relationship changes as Krishna grows to a certain extent. She can't do the same activities when he was a little baby as when he's older. So she has multi-forms also?
How that works, who knows? You know, of course, the devotees can't expand themselves. They can be with Krishna, but if Krishna's performing his pastimes in different places at different times, at the same time, then his associates must be there in some form. Of course, these devotees, we have to understand, they're part of Krishna's internal potency. They're not marginal potency. They're, of course, even marginal potency is hard to understand. But Krishna's internal potency is more, you might say, Krishna himself. It's kind of almost like Krishna in his clothes are all Krishna. So Krishna's an intimate devotees, they're all Krishna. So they're in a different category, that Shakti Tattva, that internal potency of Krishna. So yes, she's expanded, or she's somehow, she's always with Krishna, wherever Krishna is, enjoying his pastimes as he does, displaying his childhood pastimes, and Mother Yashoda must be there. Now the other thing you were saying,
she enjoys, her relationship changes somehow. It doesn't change, but she does experience different rasas, different flavors as Krishna advances. One of the things that we find in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, an act of devotion in Mother Yashoda's relationship with Krishna, is the mood of separation. So that we're not seeing here at this point in Krishna's life, because Krishna's living with her. Of course, we can just imagine that whenever he's out of her sight, she may feel that. But especially when he gets a little older and goes out to the pasturing grounds, then she starts feeling separation. And we know how separation intensifies the bhava, intensifies the pleasure. The Javita mentioned on the top of the house of Nanamaraj's palace, there's a Chandra Shalika. They would go at night, and it means a place where you can look at the moon. So they would climb up there and see, where is Krishna? When's he coming home? And they would both, Nanda and Yashoda, at different times, they would just become completely mad, say all kinds of crazy things about in separation from Krishna while he was away, even for a short time during the day. So she does experience, in different ages of Krishna, naturally she would experience different flavors in her relationship with him. Yes, Mukundapu.
Also, the Acharyas have explained, because when Krishna came back to Vrindavan after he had gone to Mathura and Dwarka, even when he came back, Krishna was so-called grown man, because already battle of Kurukshetra, everything had gone on. But when he saw Mother Yashoda, he immediately went and sat on her lap and took her breast milk.
Yeah.
So the question will come, how it's possible, he's already a grown man, everything has been done, how's possible? So the Acharyas have explained there's what is called prakosht. A prakosht is like a chamber, like you have memories from when I was a child and my mother was treating me a certain way. Or even with your own children, you can remember when your child was very young. Well, in the spiritual world, that thing is a reality. That's called a prakosht. So whenever Mother Yashoda would see Krishna, she could enter any prakosht of any age of Krishna and enjoy that leela. So therefore, even when Krishna came back from Dwarka after being a grown man, when she saw him, she entered the prakosht of Krishna's Poganda Leela when he was a small boy. And that's how she could breastfeed. So these prakosht, they exist. Even in Mahaprabhu's Leela also, which Mahaprabhu had to chastise Nityananda, because Nityananda, being absorbed, he would enter the prakosht of being a little boy, Balaram, and he would sit on the lap of Srivasa's wife and take breast milk, though he was a grown man. So Mahaprabhu had to say, "This, you know, and this Leela, you have to be careful with this, stop doing these things like this." He would walk around naked, everything. Mahaprabhu would have to dress him, so many things. So this is called prakosht.
I'm talking about relationship with Krishna. One time we went on safari to South India, and then we met this Brahmana. He has more than 1,500 shilas. And we're supposed to do the offering for the deities, and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, you know, he brought his Govardhan, and then the devotee who's taking care of the shilas his whole life, he's like, why do you put eyes to Govardhan? You cannot see his eyes without his eyes being put in the deity. So then Maharaj is like, wow, I never thought about that. He says, but he's hungry right now. You know, right now, he has to eat right now. And then Maharaj says, yeah, let me do the puja. And then the Brahmana took the diti, the shila, and threw it in the bucket of sabji. he says, hey, Lala, here's your food, eat. Boom. And then Maharaj was fiberglassed, you know, and then, so anyway, yeah. So the devotees have that type of relationship with Krishna, no?
Yeah, of course we can't imitate. Even when, who was it, went to Vrindavan, was it Sanatana Goswami? Lord Chaitanya told him, be careful with the Brijbasis because they have a different mood. You're not going to understand their relationship with Krishna. So they, yeah, of course we can't imitate, so we can appreciate that ecstasy. Prabhupada wrote an essay I saw many, many years ago, he wrote, where he talked about Nandagram during his time, the current time. He said, and the devotees there, they think that, if we don't feed Krishna, then he's not going to eat. If we don't feed the deity, he's going to be hungry. They really were, in their hearts, they were really feeling that Krishna will be hungry if we don't. So they had really taken on that mood and reached that level of
intimacy in their service to Krishna. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.